The first atomic bomb, named Little Boy, was dropped on Hiroshima, Japan, from the Enola Gay, a B-29 bomber, at 8:15 a.m. on August 6, 1945. Within seconds of the blast, temperatures in the city center reached 3,000 to 4,000 degrees Celsius, and Hiroshima was instantly transformed into a hellscape for every living soul. Today on Wings, Dr. Heideko Tamara Snyder, who survived the bombing as a 10-year-old, shares remembrances and speaks to the imperative for continued anti-nuclear proliferation activism.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
This is Robin Erickson for Wings. On August 6, 1945, the United States dropped the first atomic bomb on the city of Hiroshima in Japan. The bomb's explosive power was equivalent to 15,000 tons of TNT, resulting in mass destruction, death, and the release of toxic radioactivity into the atmosphere. Approximately 60% of the city was destroyed immediately. 42 out of 45 hospitals were knocked out of service, and 90% of Hiroshima's doctors and nurses were killed by the bomb. Some who entered Hiroshima after the bombing also perished from the radioactivity. Between the bombing and the mysterious illnesses resulting from the radioactivity, an estimated 140,000 people had been killed by the end of 1945. 5 to 6 years after the atomic bomb fell, many survivors had developed leukemia, and after a decade later, survivors were suffering from thyroid, breast, lung, and other cancers. Heideko Tamara Snyder was 10 years old when she survived the atomic bomb of Hiroshima. She helped found One Sunny Day Initiatives and is the author of One Sunny Day, A Child's Memories of Hiroshima, published by the Oregon State University Press. She lives in Oregon, where she dedicates herself to promoting peace and reconciliation, and joins me now. In your book, Heideko, you write about how, as a child, you, quote, lost your universe. Can you elaborate on that for our audience?
I use those very big words because I couldn't think of anything at all. I totally lost everything. I meant anything and everything I had a relationship with, you know. I was an only child. No sisters or brothers. Losing your mother who never came home. Your life is gone. I was so totally dependent on her. Everything was done for me. And suddenly, that world was gone. And it was gone with a flash. Even though my mother was ground zero, probably died very shortly thereafter. My attachment to her saved me. She lives within my heart, even to this day. I'm a human being who almost nearly died directly with the nuclear bomb and then consequences. And, you know, I was sick and bordered life and death, and I really went through it. I, you know, have had tumors in thyroid and lungs and lots of health issues. Why must we go through this? Why does it have to happen? We lost so much, you know, of our own loved ones and everything we were attached. We understood a true value of surviving. And all of the survivors dedicated ourselves to work for helping to build peace. We did not wish anyone else to experience what we did. Depending on the approach and your attitude and perception, your experience can be worst hell on earth or the most reconciling, motivating initiative, which I, you know, try to make it. I never, ever give up. I think that's the part that kept me going, that I never gave up. And I don't know what gave me that. I think I'm still waiting for my mother to come back and then tell her, hey, Mom, look at what I tried to do and got done. And I haven't done that yet. You know, so it could be just as simple as childish as that.
I want to ask you about some of your experiences that helped you come to terms with what you refer to in your book as the deepest grief at the bottom of your heart.
Well, a lot of people ask me, aren't you angry? How would I be angry? You had nothing to do with any of the, you know, government's actions. If I have any greatest grief aimed at, it's the Manhattan Project. Manhattan Project. And, you know, Oppenheimer happened to be a brilliant theoretical physicist. But they created the bomb that goes, the thermal force will go this way and destroy. But when it go touch object, and then they don't stop. That thermal wind had a going back power. They programmed it. And that had a sucking function. And then I understood why people's eyeballs popped up and the inside came out. The science, mind you, who are supposed to enhance quality of human life and humanity, concentrated every single detail, how heinously can the human beings be tortured and killed. Now that comes to a pretty worst end of a civilization. And we even know a little bit how that Big Bang happened. And far be it for me to question, no, the Big Bang didn't mean for you to be so wicked. I think that we hold infinite possibility within ourselves, with our higher nature, from what we call good and what we call unfortunate, which is total insistence that we know competing for survival. Self-insistence and self-preservation needs to be there to protect ourselves and our survival. But staying alive and acquire, that is the question. Acquire gold, acquire material, acquire tons of cats and dogs, acquire a beautiful garden. I think acquire at the center of ourselves define who you are and who you want to be. For me, because my universe was gone and my sorrow and grief about it kept on through very sick, sick, numbing force that we all have. You know, if you had something absolutely living hell, you don't want to stay with the image, with feelings. I mean, it's a very natural human reaction to cover so that you have no more feelings. But you can't cover your feelings over your mother and over the cousin who was like a brother. And that it has to turn into a grief. And a grief will not throw things away, at least for me. I lost everything, but this was war. And war, as if there was one party who did real bad and the other party that did good. And there's no winners. It's the collateral victims who had no part in bringing in the destruction that ends up with grief. Amazing thing is that the being grief and not being angry, not because I was noble, but it just happened that way. Really, I could understand, even if I numb myself through my life, not to have a real feelings about connected to it. And it was a real sacrifice as a human being, not to have had a life with, you know, real close feelings. But I learned one thing I think that still helps me today is that the minute I found out I lost everything in my universe, I made a conscious decision that I was going around making people laugh. To this day, I laugh with any trigger. So I don't sit. I laugh. Only crazy people laugh inappropriately at bad times. But I do. It's just automatic.
Give us a specific picture of a moment in your life where you knew that peace building and peace activism was your path to reconciliation with the past.
You know, these things come with accumulation of many, many moments. I'm not the put together noble person, you know, like a respectable Japanese who looks respectable and speaks in respectable way and don't laugh like I do. It's an accumulation of life experiences that I brought, I lived through by choice, you know, that you have to do it consciously. I thought bring on change in this totally lost, dark society. And so I was starting since teenage years where we need to go. Also, because my parents were, you know, giving me the freedom to do my own thinking and decision, I was thinking towards reconciliation type of a future. I think the seeds were there then in Hiroshima. And the survivors, the grown adults were saying, no more Hiroshima. Don't let anybody else on this earth experience what we went through. And that was the right attitude. I think they had a global thought. And so without me, you know, actually understanding it, I came to acquire global attitude. Thank heavens. Yeah. So I can't think of any one moment or one incident. One thing I have that these people are probably a little short of is immediately merge with where you might be coming from and wanting to think with you. That I have. So every time my master speak to a, you know, like academic institutions or college students and, you know, auditorium, I don't make a very large note. I wait until I get there and I say a few things And then I really, really try to tune in on if they got it. And then what they are wanting, that gives me the one time on the 50th, I think, anniversary, I was on the stage with Kurt Vonnegut. He's a fantastic, clever guy. Honestly, I was enormously impressed when he said, you know, I don't know much Japanese, but I know one swear word in Japanese. And I thought to myself, which word is he going to say? And he said, Nagasaki. You know, he didn't have to say any word to describe or accuse. Mr. Vonnegut, you deserve every award. That was a remarkable experience, being able to recognize ability of others to perceive at a great depth, to understand. I mean, I had enormous curiosity because, remember I told you, all my life I numbed my feelings. So I kept myself away from really encountering, you know, touching the real experience. And that's the reason I had to go everywhere to touch it and see it and experience it. But I realized there was a deep wound on both sides. And my immediate reaction was, we're not the only one that needs to heal. That's where I got the term collective healing.
I'm talking to Dr. Heideko Temera Snyder, who survived the atomic bombing of Hiroshima when she was 10 years old. I want to bring us back to the organization that you founded in 2007.
Yes.
You helped found One Sunny Day Initiatives.
Yes.
Tell us about its mission, mandate, and activities.
My mission was deeply, deeply grieved heart and still living mind to come up with for us all to take care of our wounds together. And that made it necessary to make a bridge and connection. So I did everything I can to bring such connections. How can you work together for collective solutions, negotiations? Japanese should see there are Americans who believe in peace creating and singing peace songs. It worked both ways, but I also brought Japanese over here, you know, and then introduced them to organizations and leaders who are doing worthwhile peace activities and peace creation. And there's a green legacy, Hiroshima. That's the planting of the Hiroshima trees. And also, I drafted and published books. The first book was When Peace Tree Blooms. If you hit on our OSD initiatives website, you will see all about, you know, our mission statement, our books project, and our green legacy. More than you want to see. Oh, you know, you have so many things and your time is limited.
Maybe you can tell us what you learned while working to promote peace and nuclear non-proliferation.
As serious as I was, and I must be simple-minded, when treated to protest the nuclear weapon was accepted by ICANN, I thought, oh, my job was done. They can do it now. I don't have to be so nauseous talking about anything. The world isn't that simple. Since then, I think there are more countries that possess nuclear weapons. If not offensive, they seem to have a gesture defense. I don't think you want to attack us because we will attack you right back, kind of. So my simple-minded joy sort of like turned to a somber realization on this into some indefinite future when every weapon is dismantled, actually. This is going to go. And as long as human beings' brain can put together how to make it, and it's not that complicated to make it, nuclear weapon is going to be here. You know, it was discovered, and it will be here. And if it wasn't Oppenheimer, somebody else would have come up once the force of the nuclear fission was known. We are in a precarious state. We've been given test of nuclear weapon existence. And for me to sit and ponder about, I still go into dark hole and, you know, Big Bang time. What in the world was the whole point of a life being born? That connects right immediately with you, because what's the point of you being here and rattling your mouth? I mean, my mouth. Human beings, we definitely have our nature, and we definitely have to choose. And we have, thank heavens, a choice, even though some people's, you know, social determinism, you have no choice. No, no, no. You go way, way deep inside. You have a choice. Your real responsibility to yourself is how you exercise that choice. And I hope and pray it is a caring one for the planet. And I try to do that with all my projects.
What is the message you think the world needs to hear right now in regards to nuclear weapons and the threat of nuclear war?
Do you love your child baby? Do you want that baby to grow up? Do you want that baby to have trees around, grass to sit on? Or if you are not inclined in that direction, do you like to rise, stay alive, connect your body with your mind and heart, and three of them together called life and being alive? However you want to be alive is your business, but it is the business of human race for you to be quality alive, which is being happy and caring. So, be alive. And I hope you will be caring in quality in your own way. Otherwise, kind of a wasting your time being here.
In conclusion, Heideko, I'm wondering if you would be willing to read your poem, Memories of Wounds and Joy, for us.
I wrote this at the request of my good friend from the military academy days. He became administrator of one of the trading company, and his business was in China. And you know, Japanese are hated in China. I know how Japanese behaved in China, and we had a lot to apologize for. So I did it for my friend, but I put my heart into it. Memories of Wounds and Joy. Letter of apologies to the people of China. Forgive me for not speaking out of my terror before now, at finding out as a young teen of the horrific victimization you suffered at the hands of our military. Forgive me for feeling powerless when only the sickened feelings return, even now, as I felt the pain of your wounds, disconnected in shame from the sins of history. For you are a guest in our home, as my grandfather's partner, revered and commanding all our attention under the head of our family. For you were my favorite storybooks of enchanting heroes of the three kingdoms, of monkeys empire flying across the sky all through my childhood, shedding tears and laughing time and again, sharing the common bond with your mother continent, mountains, rivers, and the misty valleys. We grew up seeing the scrolls and screens in our homes. We remember them even after they were lost in the war fire. You were the forebearers and teachers. We owe much to you for our own heritage in arts, religion, and values we share. When I mourned after our losses in our own war memories, sensitized to our own pain alone, we've erred hopelessly without seeing the acts of violence perpetrated outwardly of their consequences to our neighbors. I lost my universe to the atom bomb, but I hid from their impacts, trying to hold myself together with dignity and wholeness, yet holding on to the hurts of wounding. But I was wrong. There was no hiding. There was no wholeness in inhumane experience. The imperfections and consequences from the inhumane wounding slowly surfaced, and I began to see, for all the perils and the darkness of losses and their memories, that you must have endured for so long. I am truly sorry. Please forgive me. Forgive if such a thing is possible in collective healing with me. Let us honor our beginning from the ancient times of joy and respect again.
Heideko Tamara Snyder, you are a special soul. Thank you so much for your time today.
It was a privilege and honor. Thank you.
You heard an interview with Dr. Heideko Tamara Snyder, co-founder of One Sunny Day Initiatives. Wings thanks all our supporters, including your community radio station, Suzette Cullen, Lisa Hayes, and Genevieve Vaughn, whose events can be found at maternalgifteconomymovement.org. The Wings sound logo is from the Bonos album, The Circle is Cast. On behalf of Wings series producer Frieda Worden, I'm Robin Erickson. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.